This is Rainmaker FM, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at chrisducker.com/Rainmaker.
This is Youpreneur FM, the official podcast of the Youpreneur Mastermind Community. A place where no entrepreneur gets left behind in their pursuit of building a business they can be proud of.
And now,
here's your host, serial entrepreneur and best-selling author, Chris Ducker.
Well, hello and welcome to episode number 159 of Youpreneur FM. Thank you so much for being here. As always, I do very much appreciate it. There's lots of shows you could be listening in on, but you've chosen this one right now, and I do appreciate it. Today, Steve Chu is in the house. Well, he's on the show. He's not actually in my house, but he's on the show to talk all about how he went from a corporate job to his wife quitting her job, then having babies, then making six figures through handkerchiefs. And oh my God, his story is unbelievable. I know you're thoroughly going to enjoy it. Before I do that, however, I want to remind you that this month, April, we are celebrating the second birthday, the second anniversary of my best-selling book, Virtual Freedom. You can head over to virtualfreedombook.com. You'll see a brand new website, very sexy looking website. And we put together some great bundles, some great freebies. If you just buy one book, five books, or even 10 books, if you want to give them out to your friends, you're going to get some great freebies, some brand new training, brand new books, ebooks, and a lot of other stuff that I put together to celebrate the second anniversary. This book has been kind of like somebody actually literally did an Amazon review where they said that this was the outsourcing section of the 4-hour work week on steroids. So, massive compliment, obviously. If you feel like you should be grabbing a hold a copy of this, I'd love for you to head over to virtualfreedombook.com and go check it out. Now, onto my chat with Steve, really, really smart guy. We recently really just met each other over the last year or two, and we've become pretty fast friends. He's just so smart. And what I love about him is that he's a family man. He's got kids and a wife, and he's just such a nice guy to be with, and just a hoot, actually, a real goofball as well. We talk all about his journey from a corporate job to his wife quitting her corporate job, very well-paid corporate job, and how he actually replaced that income through handkerchiefs, six figures in handkerchiefs, amongst other things, and how now he's focused on helping other online entrepreneurs build really strong, profitable e-commerce-based businesses. He's such a lovely guy. I know you're going to love him, and I know you're going to need your notepad and a pen or a pencil. Grab them now, brew yourself a nice cup of coffee, put your feet up, and enjoy this really nice entrepreneurial chit-chat with Steve. It's been a while since we've told one of these entrepreneurial stories, and I know you're going to love it. Here we go. So, Steve, welcome to the show, man.
How's it going, Chris?
I'm good. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. I'm glad your internet is up and running today.
Yes. For those tuning in, side comment there. For those tuning in, we tried to do this last week, but it just the internet in the Philippines just was not working on our side at all. So Steve very graciously decided to come back again this week. We're sounding good so far, so I think we're going to be all right today. So look, man, there's so many different ways that we could go with this conversation. I mean, you are an international man of mystery, for want of a better term. No, I mean, but, you know, there's a lot that you do. What I love about you the most, and, you know, our mutual friend Pat Flynn, we both agree with this, that we have very like-minded values in the way that we're very family, you know, focused, very, you know, from a father perspective, we share a lot of the same views, being spending time with family, but also the importance of being, you know, the producer for that family as well. And you've had, I mean, a really nice rise to the way that you've built up your success online. And I wanted to get you on the first few minutes. I want to talk about that a little bit and what that journey has been like for you, because this kind of all started with your wife quitting a job that she just wasn't happy with after, was it giving birth to your first or your second?
First,
yeah. The first, okay. And then you sort of say, okay, well, now, I mean, we got to make up the money somehow. What are we going to do? And then you started getting active online. Tell us a little bit about that story and how you got started.
Dude, you tell it better than I do.
All right. Well, I'm English. Awesome. I've got the accent, you see. I can get away. It's all very J.K. Rowling up in here today.
I'll give you the 60-second version. Basically, we live in this really expensive area in Silicon Valley where you pretty much need two incomes in order to get a house and a good school district.
Sure.
And even when my wife and I were dating, she told me that she was going to quit her job as soon as she became pregnant. And this is while we're dating, right?
Right.
Like, that's pretty cocky.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she's a lady that knows what she wants, right?
Exactly, yeah. So it finally happened, and she was making six figures at the time, and so I started freaking out. And we basically just looked for businesses online that we could that she could run, actually, while taking care of the kids. And that's kind of how we stumbled upon e-commerce and selling physical products online. So our first store was, we started selling wedding handkerchiefs. And it okay. sounds funny, but we ended up doing six figures in profit in our first year. And so she could quit, and we didn't really lose any money out of it.
Look, I got to ask, I mean, how do you make six figures off of wedding handkerchiefs?
Dude, you just sell a bunch of them. It's a lot easier than making money with a blog, right?
Just pure volume, plain and simple.
It's volume, but you know, if you think about it, you got a wedding party on both sides. That's like 10 people. That's like 10 handkerchiefs, $20 a pop, right? So we're talking a couple $100 here, a couple $100 there. Six figures isn't that much, right?
No,
it's like
$266
bucks a day.
Yes, yes.
That's what it is, right?
Right, exactly. So, okay, so you got started, you did that, it worked, and then what happened next?
Well, we actually kept going, and we've been running this thing since 2007, and it's actually grown the double and triple digits since then. So I think you're alluding to the blog next, right? And so
let's go back for a minute. So you've still got that wedding store still selling, still going well. Is there any, what did you do after that? Did you try other kind of niche type websites, or did you go straight into just sort of telling a story on mywifequitajob.com?
So you're asking about the blog or how we grew the store? You're asking about the blog now, right?
Absolutely. But okay. but I also want to know, did you build any other websites between the wedding store and the blog starting? Or was that the only one? You did not.
I did
okay.
not. All right. So what ended up happening was all of our buddies, for some reason, we all started having kids at around the same time. It's not like we called each other up or anything like that.
Yeah. Arranged you sent that like an invite out. Okay.
Yeah.
Now is the time. Let's get to work. Right.
So, and, you know, naturally they wanted to quit their jobs too and stay at home with their kids. It's yeah. important for a lot of my friends. And so they started asking me all these questions, and I was like, you know, I'm just going to put all this stuff down on a blog. And at the time, like guys like John Chow, Jeremy Shoemaker, those guys were killing it with the blog,
yeah.
right? And Darren Rouse. And so I was like, okay, I'll try this. And, you know, if it makes some money, great. If it doesn't, then at least I've documented everything online.
Hmm. Absolutely. And so you started up. Can you remember what the first blog post was that you actually ended up publishing? What was it?
It was how we got motivated to start our online business.
Nice.
I think that was like the first post.
That's evergreen content right there. Is that still getting a ton of hits every month?
That article actually is not getting a ton of hits. So when I first started out, I could not write worth anything. So it's actually quite poorly written. To be honest.
Okay. But what you were doing here ultimately, though, Steve, is you were getting, you know, what was inside your head, what you had worked on, what had worked, obviously, and putting it into word form to ultimately just help out a bunch of friends to begin with. And then something must have happened. There must have been a catalyst where you thought to yourself, okay, this is maybe something a little bit more than just helping some buddies out. Maybe I can actually turn this into somewhat of a business as well. What was that catalyst? When was that moment hit?
Yeah, so what ended up happening is, so I started just kind of documenting everything I was doing to set up and run our online store. So basically every single problem that I had run into, all the tools that I used, I started just writing about it. And then all of a sudden people just found it online. I think I started ranking in Google for a couple of things, and then people just started following my story. And before you know it, people thought that I knew what I was doing back then, which I didn't know what I was doing when I first started.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, all right. So what was, you know, let's sort of start breaking this down a little bit then. So you built the blog, you're starting to get some traffic. Mm-hmm. What was your first monetization strategy for the blog itself?
Yeah. It was AdSense, actually.
Okay. All right. So how did you implement that, and what kind of money did you make out of it?
So at the time, actually, I think at that time, I wasn't really intending to make money. I had read this article from Steve Pavlina, and he in that article, he said he was making like $4,000 a day with AdSense.
Right.
And so I was like, okay. So I just kind of blended in the content in the beginning. And I think I got my first $100 check in the first couple months, I think.
Okay.
And so I was pretty thrilled with that at the time.
$100? Not to be barked at? Yeah. Not to be barked at?
Yeah.
So you've gone from sort of just helping out some friends, putting some good content together, getting a few visitors, to now monetizing it with AdSense. But mm-hmm. you must have realized that, you know, there is more that you could do rather than just sticking some ads on your site, right?
Absolutely. And so the natural next step was affiliate marketing. So I use all these companies running my online store. Mm-hmm. And it turns out a good subset of them actually had programs where if I referred someone, I would make some money.
Nice. Okay. All right. So now we're starting to get into the nitty-gritty of it, because you're using these products, these services already to run one of your other businesses online. And now you start talking about them on your blog. How did that go? Because, I mean, I know Pat, for example, has had ridiculous success with yes. that in the past, like with, you know, particularly things really started to blow up for him, because Pat and I have been friends for what, 6-7 years or whatever now, so I've seen it unravel, right? So like, I remember when he did the first ever niche site kind of contest, and
yes, I remember that. Yeah,
dude, it just blew up for him. The big one was obviously Bluehost, which still is his top affiliate partner, I think. And then there was another one, which was for the keyword searching Market Samurai. Is it? Am I right? Mm-hmm. Market Samurai.
Yeah. Market Samurai.
Now,
yeah.
I've never used it personally, but because he was using it himself. I mean, he crushed it with that. And so, I mean, how did you go about? Did you just sort of just like sit down and start writing content that would sort of be weaved into these affiliate links, or vice versa? Or did you actually sit down and really plan it out properly? I'm curious.
No, I didn't plan it out. In fact, what I did was I ended up going back to the posts where I wrote a bunch of how-tos, and I just shoved in the affiliate links of those tools is all I really did.
Okay.
It wasn't really intentional in the beginning.
Right. So you just sort of say, hey, I've got the content already here. Let's slam these links in and see what happens. What did happen?
And, you know, I started getting sales on those, and those payouts, of course, were a lot bigger than any sort of AdSense yeah. payout. Yeah. yeah,
exactly. So, I mean, did that prompt you to sort of start thinking about things a little bit more deeply on the affiliate side of thing?
So here's the thing. Even back then, and this is just like the first year or two, it wasn't making that much money. And so I was like, you know, it's cool, but I was still just kind of chugging out, pumping out content, whatever I was working on. I wasn't really deliberate with it in the very beginning.
Interesting. I mean, it's funny because I think a lot of people that are listening into this right now are trying to be too deliberate with a lot of the things that they do, particularly when it comes to monetization. And there's nothing wrong with having a strategy, having a plan. But I think sometimes it pays to be maybe a little bit more fluid in the way that you try things out, because, you know, if you don't, you're sort of, you're almost banking on it, right? To a certain degree. And that's one thing I've taken away so far from this chat with you, is that you weren't really banking on this. Like, this was pure gravy. This was all extra at the end of the day, right?
Well, so what I was trying to do actually was I was trying to figure out what topics my readers actually wanted to read. So I actually wrote about a bunch of different stuff in the beginning. I started writing about like how to educate your kids about money. I started writing about investments and stuff. And then the thing that really got traction was all my e-commerce activities. Nothing right. else really got that much traction. So I kind of just focused on that after I figured out that was working.
So ultimately, you listen to your audience. Simple as that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, I'm always harking on to people. Like, I get emails and messages from people every day asking me, you know, what do I write about? What do I podcast about? What do I do? And it's, well, it's the same thing over and over again. I mean, this is case in point right here. You guys tuning in, you hear me talk about this stuff all the time. Steve's just proved me right here. You produce content that you think your audience would be interested in. And then after a time, they'll start showing you and telling you in one way, shape, or form what they really want to hear from you. And then it's your job to go ahead and start creating that content more often, and maybe even focus in on it completely. So What did you do? I mean, did you sort of sit down? This is where I like to get like as in-depth as possible here, okay? Like okay. With content itself, because I'm very strategic with the content that I create. Like I'll book out my content schedule usually a quarter in advance. So we're at the time of recording this, we're in Feb, but this will actually be coming out at the beginning of April because I'm batching a load of stuff right now. But for like right now in the middle of February, we already have the second quarter plotted for chrisducker.com. I know exactly the type of content that I'm creating. Some of it's already been created, including stuff like infographics and blog posts as well. So did you, like, what's your, maybe let's fast forward a little bit to where you are today. So you've got a successful blog, you've got a successful kind of presence and brand online. Like, have you become more strategic with your content? And if not, why?
So here's the thing. I definitely do not have a quarter's worth of content planned out. Usually what I write about is what I just happen to be implementing with my site. Usually.
Okay.
And sometimes I don't know what that's going to be until – so I'll have stuff planned out maybe for like 2 or 3 weeks at most. And I only post once a week.
Okay.
So we're not talking about a whole lot of content here.
But you also podcast as well, right?
I also podcast as well, yeah.
Okay, so is that one blog post and a podcast each week, or is it just the podcast each week now?
It's one blog post and one podcast every week.
All right, so two pieces of content every single week, week in, week out. How long have you been going with that in terms of consistency?
Since the beginning. So Pat and I actually started blogging around the same time, around 2009-ish, I think.
Okay.
So I've been, same pace for many years, actually.
Do you think that consistency has enabled you to build the site in a more, what's the word I'm looking for, in a more kind of regular way where you don't have so many peaks and troughs? Or have you seen those peaks and troughs? Like, I'm just curious to know whether the consistency has really worked for you, because for me, it's 100% key. Like, I've got to be super consistent, but some people are not so consistent with their stuff.
So I don't know in terms of peaks and troughs, you know, in terms of consistency, but for me at least, in order for me to actually accomplish something, I need to kind of make a habit out of it.
Mm.
And so I have certain days of the week where I do my blog post, certain days of the week where I do my podcast, and I have this very consistent schedule. If I kind of went off of that, I could see myself not writing for like a couple of months and not even realize it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, when we launched Youpreneur September 1 last year, 2015, just in case you're listening to this in 2030, I decided I was going to take a little bit of time off from the blogging. The podcast still went up every Friday, but I decided I was going to take some time off from the blogging because I wanted to focus in on my new members and make sure that, you know, everything was working okay. And I did. I saw a drop in my traffic, which is strange because, well, maybe it's not so strange because, I mean, I have over 600 blog posts at chrisducker.com, and I'm sure you've probably got even more than that. But, mm-hmm. I mean, it was like, for me, it was really the clarity that I needed to really understand that the consistency of creating this piece of content each week was incredibly, incredibly important, not just for me, but also for my readers, because they wanted it. They needed it. They were looking for it. And I wasn't delivering. And because of that, they just stopped visiting the site. It was obvious, you know? So I've had to kind of claw my way back a little bit at the beginning of this year. And I'm happy to say that, you know, we are back to where we were. But it's really interesting to see how you've got that. So you literally have it on your calendar, on your schedule, every week, same time every week you sit and write?
Pretty much, yeah. Mm. So Sunday morning is when I do my writing. And then the podcasts go out. Usually I work on that on Thursdays.
It's funny how some people need to be more regimented than others, isn't it, with this sort of stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, that's the way to go.
Yeah, no, I hear you. All right, so let's deep dive a little bit then into monetization. I mean, you've got podcast over 100 episodes on there. You've got hundreds and hundreds of blog posts. How are you now monetizing this brand that you've built up? What are the different avenues?
Everything goes through email today.
Love it.
Almost
so that's
everything.
That's kind of like your number one focus, is to get everybody on your list. Simple as that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So let's discuss the different offerings that you've got, And then we'll talk about how you're working people through your funnel a little bit to get to those. Is that cool?
Yeah, sounds good.
I'm sure people tuning in would be you know, interested in that. So what have you got working? You know, let's start from the cheapest and go right up to the most expensive product or service that you offer.
So, Chris, I actually only offer one product on the entire site.
I love this. Okay, this is great.
And that's actually a course that sells for $1,100 now.
Okay.
It didn't used to be this expensive, but just as demand has kind of risen, I've risen the price over the years.
Why not? Absolutely. Okay. So everything goes through. So I love the clarity, Steve. It's so good because I think so many people get wrapped up in trying to come up with all these different offerings, and all they really probably need is one, maybe two maximum to make some good money off of, right? So how are you? This is so good. So how are you now working people into that funnel and getting people to buy that course?
So the stuff that I do, I mean, there's nothing truly novel about it, but I guess we can talk about the approach and what's inside some of these email autoresponder sequences.
Yes.
That's where the interesting stuff is.
Yeah.
But basically, I have this lead magnet. So first of all, I teach a class that teaches people how to sell physical products online successfully.
Okay. So you're going back to your handkerchief days, basically.
Basically, yeah. Basically,
okay.
Yeah. Essentially, yeah.
All right. Good.
So what I give away is a free email course on how to just get your website up and running, like the shopping carts and everything.
Okay.
And it's very detailed. So it's a bunch of text, and there's videos for each lesson as well.
Okay.
So in fact, I've gotten comments that I could have sold this class as is, just the free part of it.
That's the best kind of opt-in to create right there, one that you could put a dollar amount on.
And, you know, since the product is expensive, you know, a lot of people aren't going to be buying. So for the people that don't buy, the way I've kind of structured these tutorials are they walk you step by step on how to start your own e-commerce store. But along the way, and I kind of learned this from Pat in a way, I guide people in these tutorials along the lines of, you know, clicking on my affiliate links.
Sure.
And following along step by step, you know, from the point of sign up.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Okay.
And so if they're following along, and meanwhile I'm making affiliate revenue, and if they're interested, they'll sign up for the full-blown course.
Okay, now is the course so how many emails in before you pitch that course for the first time?
So I allude to it starting in email 3, but I don't do like a pitch for it until email 7, I want to say.
Okay. And in each of those emails up to number 7, it's just content.
Straight tutorial.
Content. Right.
Yeah. Videos, tutorials, podcasts.
And is this something that is, you know, it I'm assuming very heavily here, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, I'm assuming that this is taking them through that journey step by step. So every day, when they're done, they know that there's going to be the next lesson coming up the day after or 2 days later or whatever.
That is correct.
Okay, great. I love it. Okay, so ultimately what you're doing here is you're taking them on that journey of setting up their first online store. And then, I mean, are you, as the content creator, assuming heavily that by the time email number 7 comes along and the pitch is presented to them that they've got to a certain point in that journey? Or do you feel like just from a marketing perspective that you've given them all this content, now's the time to ask for some money? I mean, like, what's your mindset around email number 7?
So the tutorial is 6 days long. And so email 7 just happens to be the end of the mini tutorial.
Okay.
And it was just a logical point to make the pitch.
Right. As simple as that. Okay. So yep. What if they don't? Okay, let's keep positive. If they do buy, what happens then? Are they removed from that marketing funnel and then put into the course funnel? Or, I mean, what happens if they buy?
If they buy, they are removed from that first funnel, and then they're just placed on the class email list, where I have another email autoresponder sequence primarily there to give an orientation and to kind of guide them along so they don't ask for a return, essentially.
Right, okay. So ultimately, just it's an onboarding process, for want of a better term.
It's onboarding, encouragement, and a set of guidelines that they should be following, essentially.
Cool, okay. We have exactly the same thing with Youpreneur. Whenever anybody signs up, they get, I think we've got, let me get this right, I'm going to say six emails over a 4-week period to sort of walk through, you know, and there's a couple of bits of content that are really, really, you know, bang on perfect for new members to look at. There's a couple of really in-depth forum threads in there that are just on fire at any given time. And this is the stuff that people sign up for in the first place. So we're just delivering it to them in a way that, you know, they can easily digest it. So it's good to see you doing that as well.
I think mine is 15 emails across 30 days, actually.
That's good. I mean, every other day, that's fantastic. I like that. And you know, we're still testing. I mean, we're like 6 months in with Youpreneur. I mean, it's still infancy time as far as I'm concerned. And for me personally, this is the long game. So we're going to be tweaking and testing that funnel for probably a good year still to make sure that, you know, it's providing people what they want and need. So, okay, back to you. If they don't buy at email number 7, they've consumed the course, they've had the pitch, they don't buy, what happens next for Steve's friends online?
Yeah, so the email sequence is actually 30 emails long. So just to be clear. And if the first 7 are, they get them like every day. And then the frequency gradually kind of declines a little bit to the point where they're getting them once a week. And after the pitch, after the teaching is done, that's usually where I start. Like all the posts after that are kind of storytelling posts. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of designed so that people can get to know me as a person.
Okay.
I also have different stories about the students in the class who are doing very well. And so a combination of student stories, podcasts, and then just stories that kind of address people's objections to signing up, so to speak. Because a while back, I sent out a survey just to people on my list, and I asked them, so why haven't you signed up for the class?
Love it.
And there was a lot of common objections. And just over the years also, I've been getting a lot of questions from just running the blog. And they all kind of fall into certain buckets. And the reason why the sequence is so long is because there's a lot of objections that you kind of have to address and overcome in these emails.
Yeah.
And what I found is, you know, it just really depends on what the objection happens to be for that particular person. But hopefully by the end of email 30, I've covered all of them.
Right.
Or almost all of them at that point. And usually the signups kind of just trickle in after that pitch.
I like it. I like it. So, I mean, so even though someone didn't buy a first time round, you know, another 20 something emails later, and they're, you know, splattered in between all of those as well, you're getting people signing up to the course as you're going through their objections, handling those objections and putting them to sleep ultimately.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I'm sure you probably do something similar, right? You probably have the same objections that I do with my customers. I'm just guessing, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately online per se, I think if you're selling, you know, whatever it is you're selling online, particularly if it's, you know, access to something in some way, shape or form, you know, the objections are usually like, how will I know if this is right for me? You know, is it guaranteed to make me money? You know, all this sort of stuff. Like, I think a lot of the objections are probably very, very similar. You're absolutely right. What is completely different is how we handle those objections, because obviously, you know, we're all different people and we all sell in different ways and we'll handle those objections in very different styles. I have a slightly more abrupt, not rude, but abrupt way of handling. Dude, I've been in the sales business since I was 17. So, you know, I can smell a time waster a mile away. So, you know, I generally, you know, there's certain things in place where I will become a little bit more abrupt and a little colder answering. But, you know, if somebody has genuine, you know, needs that need to be met before they make a decision, then I'll go ahead and, yeah, without a doubt, I'll go ahead and handle those objections because they're there to be handled. It's just the prospect saying, I need a little bit more help before I buy. Can you help me, please? That's what an objection is at the end of the day. And it's our job as marketers to answer them if we want to make sales, you know?
I'm just curious, Chris, on your end, do you use any senses of urgency in your autoresponder sequence?
There is one email, which is about two. So I have a slightly shorter sales cycle. So we have three videos that go in three days in a row. And then we have a simple question email. And then a day or two after that, we have the answers to those questions. And then we go into our first pitch. So our first pitch ends up being, I think, around day number 9, I think. So actually a little longer than yours, but I don't have 30 bloody emails in there. but we have a period of about 2 weeks or so where there is a scarcity offer presented after they sign up. Or is it after they – it's either after they sign up or after they've had the first pitch. I can't quite remember now. But there is a scarcity pitch at some point in the autoresponder where if they don't sign up by a certain time related to when that email is received, the offer disappears. And that was all set up by my web – team and everything. Don't ask me how to do that, but it works.
Does it really disappear?
It does. Yeah, the page ultimately. I don't know how they set it up, but it was like it's like a timer on the page in some way, shape, or form, where the page just ends up being a 401 basically after a certain period of time. I don't know how they do it, but the bottom line is it works. It does work, and I see sales coming in. I would say not necessarily. You see, again, this is a new funnel. It was only created about 4 weeks ago, right at the beginning of the year. So we're still yet to see, I need a good 90 days, maybe even a little longer than that to see how it's working before we start tinkering and tweaking. But I see a sale coming in at least every few days, at least every 2 to 3 days from that particular offer. So it is working. Volume-wise, we'll see how things go over a period of time. Like I said, a brand new funnel. This is the exciting stuff, man. Like I love doing this stuff. You know what I mean? Like I genuinely enjoy it. A lot of people hate doing it. For me, I'm still not a big fan of writing the sales copy itself. I do it personally myself, and I think I've become a pretty good copywriter over the last year or so. But at first, when I started, even though I'm a sales guy, I hated writing sales copy. So I used to hire people to do it for me. But now things have changed, and I've become a little bit more confident in my sales copy ability, thanks to working with guys like Ray Edwards and seeing what other people are doing. You learn by watching other people, and it's still not so exciting for me. But I do it because I feel like I want to do it now. It should be me that does it. But what really is exciting for me is looking at the numbers. I'm a numbers guy. Anybody that knows me knows that I'll say it quite regularly: the numbers never lie. The numbers never lie. And, when you run as many businesses as I do, have hundreds and hundreds of people working for you, you look at the darn numbers. You look at them every single week to see what's working and what's not. And so I can't wait. I give 90 days on this funnel. We'll have a look at it going into April, and we'll see how it's working. And if we need to make tweaks, we will make tweaks. That's the exciting stuff about it. I love it.
Yeah, the reason why I asked you all those questions, because I actually tried a funnel that had it is kind of false scarcity, because there's different ways to track your person. It's usually by IP or a cookie or something like that.
Sure, right? Yeah.
But, if someone uses a different computer and goes to that page, they'll still have the offer later on, usually, right? So it was kind of working, but I just felt kind of guilty about it. Like, I didn't want to piss anyone off, right?
Sure. Yeah.
And so the way
let me address that. Sorry to interrupt you, but let me address that. Remember, in business, you can't please all the people all the time as well. I've become, acutely aware of that, particularly in the last few years as I've been building out my personal brand as my main focus online. Like, I will piss people off, but that's okay, because they probably wouldn't end up being customers of mine anyway. That's kind of my mentality, you know?
Yeah, but for, shy, timid Chinese guys like myself, we tend not to like to create conflict if not necessary. So so I ended up removing that. And what I ended up doing is I started telling stories in emails that kind of created a somewhat of a sense of urgency. So, for example, I would tell the story, and this is a true story, when I was kind of courting my wife, so to speak, I was really chicken in the beginning. You know how people are hesitant to take the plunge in a business, I was really chicken to ask my wife out.
Right.
And in fact, it took me forever. Like, the first time I could not get her number. I just couldn't get the courage. Second time, which was a month later, I chatted with her for 20 minutes and I still didn't get her number. And during this entire time, I was thinking to myself, God, she could have been, finally what ended up happening was I was thinking to myself, God, anyone could just ask her out and just take her away. And so finally, right then and there, I decided to just do it. I contacted a mutual friend, just got her number and asked her out, and then the rest was history.
There you go.
So
What a stud you are, deep down inside.
It's that shy Chinese guy, I'm telling you, man.
I don't know. I've met many Chinese people in my life that are not shy, right? I can tell you that right now.
It is true. It is true.
But I mean, we met for the first time, actually. We've met a couple of times since, but the first time where we really had the opportunity to hang out and really get to know each other was back in 2014 when we met at FinCon. And yep. We went out one night with Noah Kagan from Sumo and Me and AppSumo and Jeff and Mandy Rose. There was another couple of people there that night as well. But we got onto this, and this is purely just a personal story slash joke that I'll let everybody in on here. We got onto the subject of men drying themselves off with their ladies' hair dryers, and we'll leave it at that. We won't go any further than that. Manny had a few things to say about that. Jeff had a few. Noah, and then we got on the subject of men's underwear. And a week and a half later, I get underwear sent to me from Noah Kagan.
That's funny because I sent him a set too. I sent him a set of Lululemons.
Right. Yeah. Because I think you and I were on the Lululemon brigade.
Well, you were raving about them, right?
Yeah.
I think it's you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I've now actually switched. This is way too much info. I've switched to Calvin Klein. What happened was, actually, I was over in the US and I forgot to pack underwear. Like I didn't have a single set of underwear in my suitcase. I arrived after a 21-hour journey from the Philippines. And I take a shower and I come out and I've got no underwear. I'm like, oh my gosh, I've got no underwear. I need to go shopping. So I went to, I don't know whether it was a Macy's or a Nordstrom or whatever, over in Vegas. And there was a special offer on Calvin Klein. They were like $20 a pop. And I was like, oh, great. I'll get, you know, a few of these. And then I'll pop down to Lululemon and pick up some more. And they were so comfy and they were so, you know, such a good value that I just decided to go back and I bought like another load of pairs. So I have switched since. But Noah Kagan has, he sent me a pair of Saks, which are incredibly comfortable as well. But here in the Philippines, just a little bit too hot. Let's leave it like that. So, but yeah, so we got onto this. And then for weeks and weeks and weeks, you were sending photoshopped images of everybody at that table with anyway, we'll leave it like
wait, we can post those in the show notes, right?
Yeah, they'll be over at the show notes, everybody.
Okay, yeah, they're good.
They'll be over at the show notes. And it was like, and you'd think that the email thread was dead because we didn't hear anything from anybody for like 2 weeks. And then out of nowhere, another email would turn up from Steve with another image.
And it would, devil, like one or the other, yeah.
Oh, it was somebody, yeah. Yeah. It was a great time. And I must say, like, just to wrap up here, I mean, you know, a lot of people go to these events and they tend to, and I've noticed this myself, and I've been guilty of this myself way in the past, not now though. When I go to these events, yes, I want to connect with people that I've already got relationships with and deepen those relationships, but I also want to be able to create new relationships as well. I think that's incredibly important. For me, relationships are the most important part of my entire business. And so I'm always wanting to meet new people and get to know each other. And I didn't know you very well. I knew of you. And I think we'd met one time very briefly prior to that. But that evening where we genuinely got the chance to sit and drink some wine and break bread, that was the time where we really got to know each other properly. Do you think, I mean, I'm kind of alluding to this, I guess, in my questioning here, but I mean, like, do you think that people should start taking these kind of in-person events a little bit more serious and making the most out of them? Or do you think they should just carry on hanging out with their same bunch of buddies every time?
Dude, I think a mixture is good. Like, things actually didn't start taking off for me until I started going to conferences, actually.
Interesting.
And just working with other people, like with webinars and just JV deals and just helping each other out by linking to each other, all those things started happening after I met a group of friends at various conferences that I was attending. So very important. Meeting new people, hanging out with existing people. I started doing it all.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for me, the first kind of online-based event that I went to was Blogworld in 2010, and I met a lot of people there for the first time. And even, I mean, you know, we brought Pat up a few times in this conversation. That was the first time he and I had actually met in person, but we'd been buddies online for over a year or so at that point. And that meeting, that first in-person meeting for me and Pat, really took things to a whole new level very, very quickly. You know, we had, you know, the connection in place with his mom being from Cebu here in the Philippines, and, you know, our sons are roughly the same age and all this sort of stuff. So, I mean, like, there was that connection already in place, but you just can't be, you just cannot be hanging out with people in person, I think. It's just, it's, and I think it's an important message to send to people tuning in, is that, yes, we're building online businesses, and yes, you know, we're building, for people tuning into Upreneur FM, they're building businesses based around their brands, which include, obviously, building relationships is a very, very key part of it. But doing it offline, I think, is just as important, or maybe even more important in terms of longevity, as doing it online. That's my take on it.
And funny conversations always happen when the alcohol is flowing, like hair dryers and that sort of, and underwear, you know, that sort of thing that you're not going to forget.
Exactly. And I think, yeah. I remember posting a picture of that underwear to Instagram saying, when is it acceptable for one man to send another man underwear after meeting them for the first time? And then, you know, the side comment was, when it's Noah Kagan or something along those lines, you know? Yeah, it was good. Well, look, man, it's been great chatting to you. Thank you so much for sharing the inner workings a little bit of how you've sort of set things up. I think the clarity of just having that one main product, that's huge, dude. Like, that's a massive takeaway for me right there. I mean, you know, we're all big lovers of wanting to simplify our lives, but sometimes we overcomplicate them as well, you know?
Well, I think when it comes to just any blog or what, it's better to be focused towards one thing and just being the best at one thing as opposed to kind of spreading yourself too thin. I don't know.
Agreed. No, yeah. Agreed 120%. Couldn't agree more with you. Steve, you're a rock star. Thank you very much, man, for coming on. I appreciate it.
Dude, thanks, man. Good talking.
All right. And for you guys tuning in, show notes, no pictures of underwear or hair dryers, I promise.
Wait. I thought we were going to... What?
He's going to leak them now.
I know. I can set up a separate page. You don't want it on your property. I can put these photos on.
I'm sure you could. Just leak them out. Leak them. Just leak them out. It'd be great. Let's see where the WikiLeaks gets hold of them. Show notes over at chrisducker.com/episode159. Make sure you visit Steve over at mywifequitherjob.com as well. I'll be back at you again next week with another fantastic episode of Upreneur FM. Until then, take good care.
If the idea of an entrepreneurial community where you get to learn from the best in the business, as well as rub shoulders, gain support, have access to immediate feedback, as well as nonstop accountability from your peers, is something that excites you, then visit upreneur.com for more information and to get started on building a business you can truly be proud of today. That's upreneur.com. We'll see you on the inside.